So Ruth and I don't always agree on food. When it comes to carryout orders, for example, I am always going to get fries with my wings.
And I'm always going to go with fried rice.
Don't even get me started on jumbo slice.
It's the only pizza you need to eat by the slice in DC. Someone tell Gordon Ramsay.
But we can definitely agree on one iconic food in our region, and that is crabs.
We love picking them. It's something we do with friends and family every summer.
And while we don't always agree, we become more powerful when we do. So when our producer, Shweta, told us she had never picked crabs before, we joined forces, like Voltron, to give her the full experience.
I just don't like to work for my food. Like, I also don't really like ribs for the same reason. It's a lot of work.
Really? I don't feel like ribs.
Ribs is meat on a stick. Yeah, this is if you don't like ribs, you are not.
This is gonna
like
be bad news.
Ribs.
This is even more work than that.
We took Shweta to Quarterdeck in Arlington and ordered half a dozen medium males.
Yeah, my parents' old saying that you don't get full eating crabs, you get drunk or tired.
Yeah,
both.
Or both. We asked our server for a crab picking tutorial.
You're gonna take this little guy off.
Okay.
In the bucket. These are the lungs. Some people eat them, some people don't. I usually don't.
I'm gonna be honest, that's not what I was expecting the inside to look like.
And then, crack this.
Cut it in half.
Okay.
And there you have the meaty, like that. And with the claws.
The pincher.
And then with the mallow, you're gonna go soft. Don't go too hard. Like this, and like that, you have the meat.
Okay.
You can also dip it on the butter. You can make some vinegar and seasoning. It tastes really good. And that's pretty much all you do.
I'm excited. Let's do this.
Thank you so much.
Enjoy. You're welcome.
Thanks so much.
Alrighty then.
I mean, she actually picked your first crab for you.
Yeah. I know.
But
well, that's. I don't think you can consider it my crab. But,
I don't.
Now, it was Shweta's turn.
Let's see if I remember how to do that.
Oh, we forgot to ask what seasoning it is. So, yeah, I would recommend a mallet.
Yeah.
Don't hurt yourself.
Those are usually pretty hard to get into with just your fingers.
Yeah.
Am I doing it hard enough?
Well, are you cracking it open?
Okay. She was like, don't do it too hard.
Despite all this dirty work, crabs are a luxury. It takes a long time and it's expensive. It's not uncommon to pay $100 for a dozen crabs. It is unclear, though, if we converted Shweta.
I'm on the fence about whether I like this better, worse, or equal than a crab cake, you know?
But at least I feel like it's fun, it's an experience, you know?
It's crab in its pure form.
Yep.
But picking a crab is really the very last step in a journey that starts much, much earlier, on the Chesapeake Bay, or on the Gulf of Mexico, or even in the Indian Ocean.
This is Dish City. I'm Patrick Fort.
And I'm Ruth Tam. We tell stories of city change through our region's iconic foods. Maryland crab is a regional favorite, whether you pick them whole or eat them in crab cakes. They're how we experience summer around the Chesapeake Bay.
But the more popular Maryland crab is, the more pressure is placed on all the industries that support it. Nowadays, the crab you're buying may not even be blue crab from the bay.
The hunger for steamed crabs has led local seafood companies to make crabbing a global business.
People don't realize what it takes to bring fresh seafood from the boat to your throat.
So on this episode, what it takes to get Maryland crab from the boat to your throat.
Oh, man. Can we do from the bait to your plate?
Or from the bay to your tray.
Okay, fine. One of those will work.
You know what's cool, Ruth? Middle parts, tie-dye, platform Crocs. Also, writing reviews for Dish City. We'd love to hear what you think of the show.
So leave us a review wherever you listen to podcasts. We'd really appreciate it. Now, let's get back to the show.
Understanding what it's like to work as a crabber means maintaining a crabber's schedule.
It's 4 o'clock in the morning. I gotta get up, and not only do I have to get up, but you have to get up and go crabbing.
Wow, you sound like a completely different person at that hour.
Can you blame me?
Absolutely not. It was so early.
It was 4 o'clock in the morning, and we wanted to understand what it took to get crabs on the table to begin with, right? So, yes, one day in May, at 4 a.m, we got up to go crabbing on a commercial crabbing boat.
Hell's yeah.
Good morning. How you doing?
Hey. We met up with Captain C.J. Canby, who's basically spent his whole life on the Chesapeake Bay. He's been a professional crabber for 21 years. We arrived with a bunch of our own gear, recorders, mics, all that, but we weren't the only ones recording. C.J. films himself on his boat, the Miss Paula, using a GoPro, and he shares that footage with plenty of commentary on his YouTube channel.
I started crabbing in 2002.
Like to smell shrimp in the morning.
Started full time working for another crabber for.
It's a way to illuminate this field, his way of life, to people who love Maryland crabs but don't really understand where they come from.
I work in an alien world. I really do. I mean, people love crabs, eat crabs all the time. They have absolutely no idea how they got to the table in front of them.
That's
no clue. Absolutely no clue. So
that's why we're here.
Welcome to the alien universe.
The water that day was super choppy.
Hopefully the wind lays down a little bit. It's pretty gnarly now.
But it wasn't that long before we got our sea legs.
Now the next time you eat crabs, they'll just taste a little better because you had to come out here and endure this.
CJ was checking his wire crab traps, which are called pots.
5 days ago, CJ baited 500 pots with shrimp heads and then set them along 12 miles of the Chesapeake. Today, he and three other crew members were checking to see if they caught anything.
First pots of the year coming up! Maybe we'll see a seahorse. That would make your day. Makes my day.
I don't know if you're messing with us or not.
No, seriously, yeah.
And then, in that very first pot...
First crab of the year! I don't think it's even legal. It's a nice little male crab.
As people who don't do this every day, this moment was honestly thrilling. It felt very auspicious for a crab to be in the first pot, even if they couldn't keep it.
But it wound up being a rough day for CJ and his crew.
Well, today has been a terrible day in the sense of catch. Not gonna lie, I'm not gonna sugarcoat it. We did catch a couple of these little babies. Anyway, nice little male for the future. We'll let him go.
After hours on the water, they'd only brought in a few dozen crabs, about half a bushel, which nets CJ only about $100.
After fuel, bait, and wages, CJ said he probably lost $600 that day.
Probably didn't help that he had these deadweight podcasters on board.
Yeah, sorry, CJ.
This all comes with the territory, though. I mean, there's a reason that they call it crabbing and not catching. Ha ha. There's only so much you can control. For crabbers, that's their gear. Buying materials, building pots, or repairing your boat, all that prep during the season costs money. You also have to hire a crew. This is all a huge investment.
And then there's the stuff that you genuinely do not have any control over, like the weather or the climate. The day that we went crabbing, it was super windy, and the water was about 10 degrees cooler than the ideal conditions for crabbing. On top of all of this, CJ says every year there's some big external factor that can shake up everything for him.
So every year something. It could be health issues, could be freshwater issues, could be the economy. One year was truly COVID. That affected a lot of things. Mm-hmm. This year is the supply chain issues.
Everything is more expensive this year, from the wooden bushels CJ uses to store crabs to the wire he uses to make his pots.
Given all the increased costs of all the equipment that it requires to go crabbing, like are you charging more for your crabs?
I have to. And so does everybody. I mean, with fuel costs being up, people don't understand that, like, I'm not making any more money on my crabs. I'm just keeping up with the cost.
CJ says that after local watermen catch and sort their crabs, they sell them to a wholesaler who sets the price. And then that wholesaler sells them to a retailer, like a restaurant or grocery store. So the crabs already change hands 3 times before they end up on your table. And everyone takes a cut.
The fisherman typically is the one getting the least paid, which is in all fields. The workers get paid the least. The CEOs, the owners get paid the most. And that's in everything.
CJ cuts out the middleman and sells straight to one retailer who he says he can negotiate with. That's only 2 steps, but that's not the standard.
I mean, it's going to have to change if guys are going to be able to keep crabbing and keep doing it because of our costs increasing so much and so fast, the profit window is getting smaller and smaller and smaller.
On top of all that, this year, state scientists are reporting the lowest number of blue crabs in the 30 years they've been tracking the population. So add that into the mix.
CJ is good-humored about all of this. After all, he chose crabbing.
He's 44, which is atypical for a crabber.
You are talking about an industry where the average person, I think the last I heard was 55, is the average age of a, I don't know if it's necessarily a waterman or if it's more of license holders, but you're dealing with people that still, all of them don't have cell phones.
For 44-year-old CJ to be on a GoPro, on YouTube, doing his thing as a younger crabber, it sticks out. But that's nothing compared to his 26-year-old protege, Luke McFadden. Or, as CJ calls him, Captain TikTok.
All right, so when people buy crabs from me, they always ask, what's the best way to store them? The best way to do it is to put them in a cooler with ice. A couple things you're going to need, your ex-girlfriend's fancy towel that she left at your house, 40 pounds of ice, a cooler you found on the side of the road, and crabs.
Luke is 26, and he's basically the face of crabbing TikTok. CJ may be young for a crabber, but Luke is just young, period. Despite all the uncertainty built into this field, he cares so much about it. So despite all these self-deprecating jokes in his TikToks, Luke takes his social media somewhat seriously.
I get to kind of portray what I'm doing, and I'm trying to, you know, I get to portray crabbing and commercial fishing to a younger generation, which I think is awesome, and in a better light. You know, so many people's perspective of like watermen and commercial fishermen is that they just want to like take and pillage and they don't care about tomorrow, you know what I mean, and whatever else, but it's like that's not it anymore. Like there was guys like that, and I'm sure there still is a few, but it's like the new generation of crabbers, like I care about the bay, you know, like I said, it's really important to me, and I want my kids, or, you know, to be able to have the option to do this too.
Luke worked as a crew member for CJ for about a year after he graduated high school, and he's been crabbing on his own for the last 8 seasons. Like CJ, working on the water doesn't run in Luke's family. With all the challenges that we saw on CJ's boat and everything he told us, we wondered, why would a younger person want to enter this field?
I always want to be a crabber. Literally, my 5th grade yearbook under what you want to be, it says crabber. And I had like probably, I don't think I had ever been on a crab boat at that point. And I met CJ probably a little bit after that. He was a friend of my parents, and I started, you know, kind of learning the ropes with him. But like my mom and stepdad I grew up with, they don't even own fishing rods. So they were just like, this kid's wild. It was totally foreign to them.
Like CJ, Luke says most people don't understand his work and why crabs cost what they do. So he wants to be open about everything and to improve the field where he can. But even with a mentor, Luke has found the crabbing community to be a bit of an old boys club.
They don't want to associate with me because I'm that clown from the internet. You know, but in reality, like, I'm trying to save this. If I can get any sort of, I don't know, anything to happen from all this social media stuff, like, I'm trying to save our industry, dude.
Luke says it does not help that he sticks out so much in the field.
Your average crabber is, like, probably like this, I don't know, white guy about this tall, overweight, with a beard, that's lived in the same house, driven the same truck, does all the same things, you know what I mean? He ain't never changed. He'll die out there, you know what I mean? I'm just this kid. It's like he's 15, he's Asian, and he's putting stuff on the internet.
Without family ties, Luke found it hard to crack into certain aspects of being a crabber.
You know, there's people that are always trying to take advantage of you when you're young, trying to get into a business. I'd go out and, you know, guys would have, they'll take it upon themselves to move your crab pots for you because they don't want you there. You know what I mean? Or they'll fish, they'll help themselves. You know what I mean? Just because I'm young and I look like I'm probably 15, you know.
It's not just age that factors into how some other crabbers treat Luke.
I'm the only one that's not white. They're all white. Every one of them I've ever met. There's some black guys down south, but there's no Asian crabbers.
Luke is Korean and white.
I found if I try to challenge people on just being treated fairly, they get very angry. And when I've seen people, other people that are my age or that are white in the same situations, not be treated the same, you know? Definitely people seem to think that I'm out of my place, I guess.
In Luke's earlier days, someone once left him a note on a buoy.
They wrote me this note that says, "You not welcome here, go the f*** home." Like, I was hurt, but now it's kind of like, you know what? I'm just gonna give it hell. It's like, you know, it's got a fire under me like nothing I've ever had to just succeed.
Spending time with Luke and CJ, it gave us a better understanding and appreciation for our favorite summer meal. But what are the chances you'll actually eat crabs caught locally by people like Luke and CJ?
In the early 90s, the Baltimore-based seafood company Phillips started importing crab meat from Asia as a way to satisfy the local and national hunger for this dish. And it changed the game. Now, if you get crabs during the off-season, it could be from anywhere, from Louisiana and Texas to Venezuela or Thailand. It may not even be blue crab.
As much as we stan Maryland crab, it's now a global product. This has put the local crabbing industry in a really tight place. So many factors weigh on crabbers every day, and it feels like all these challenges are really starting to highlight how much work goes into getting crabs on your table.
But this isn't new. It's not a pandemic thing, not a supply chain thing. The labor that goes into getting the crabs you crave has always been undervalued. Coming up after the break.
Pull it back off and clean it, cut your crab and separate your meat as you go along.
Ruth and I started reporting this season of Dish City before the pandemic began. 2 whole years of work, and yet it arrives in your feeds for free. That's why we're here asking for your support. We operate largely on listener donations, and we're asking you to leave us a tip. Give today at wamu.org/supportdishcity.
Any amount is super helpful, and if you donate today, we'll give you a shout-out on a future episode of the show. So again, that's wamu.org/supportdishcity. Thank you so much. Now let's get back to the show. We're back. Patrick and I tried to sell our producer, Shweta, on the joy that is picking crabs, but we were not exactly successful.
And do you like crab meat, though?
Yeah, I love shellfish. I really do. I just like it in crab cake form.
Like many people, Shweta prefers to spare herself the work and mess of picking and would rather just have a crab cake.
Okay, well, I'm also going to get a crab cake then.
If you have ever wanted to know what happiness sounds like, just listen to Shweta dig into this crab cake.
So, what you're like?
Do you want to dance?
Does a happy dance?
Me? Yeah,
crab cake dance.
I'm very happy.
Oh my god, this is so good.
Crabs and crab cakes go hand in claw with Maryland and summertime. People have been eating crabs for centuries. Archaeologists have actually found evidence of crab feasts from as early as the 13th century.
The commercialization of crab picking, however, is a more recent development. It's also why you're able to order a crab cake at all, rather than having to pick the whole thing yourself. And that's why we talked to Pete Lesher.
Call me a crab snob.
Pete is a big fan of Maryland crabs, and he's also the chief curator at the Chesapeake Bay Maritime Museum.
The museum is in St. Michael's, in Talbot County on Maryland's eastern shore. This is in the epicenter of Maryland seafood, and the exhibit we met Pete in is a testament to that.
This land is built on, it's actually artificial land, it's built on oyster shells that were discarded from all the seafood packing houses that built up here over the course of the 20th century.
That's because at first, oysters were this region's big seafood specialty.
Oysters we harvest in cold weather. They've got a good shelf life of 2 weeks or so.
The crabs that were caught were picked largely by the wives of the watermen. Watermen would head out into the Chesapeake and drop their crab pots to the bottom. Later on, they'd retrieve the pots and bring the crabs ashore, where they'd be picked and sold to locals.
Until we have artificial refrigeration and artificial ice making, you can't ship crabs very far. You can harvest crabs and have a crab feast on the shore, but you're not going to pick them and ship them to distant cities the way we do today until you have that technology for refrigeration and ice making.
Most of the seafood packing facilities completely pivoted their businesses in the summer to canning fruit and vegetables. But one enterprising crab picking facility changed that.
Colburn and Jewett, instead of fruit and vegetables, chose to go into crabs, which was kind of a new industry in the early 20th century.
As refrigeration became more common in the 1920s and 30s, commercial crab picking blew up. This meant facilities needed to hire hundreds of seasonal workers to satisfy the growing market for crab meat.
But if you're a student of history, you will know that the early 20th century was, like, not a great time for labor. And the Maryland crab industry was no different.
In the early months of 1938, the owners of the picking houses cut wages, and the workers, who were mostly black women, wanted to form a union. And owners, well, you know how they felt about that.
So that spring, crab pickers at a plant in Crisfield, Maryland, went on strike.
And it got ugly. Angry residents allied with the owners blocked food from getting to the striking workers.
Some residents attacked union organizers and chased them out of town.
But after 7 weeks of strikes and negotiation, the owners of the crab picking houses relented. They recognized the workers' union and reinstated the higher wages. Despite that hard-fought victory for crab pickers, seafood processing houses have continued their quest to cut labor costs.
In the 70s, some industrious crab bosses wanted to automate the task of picking a crab, and they came up with a special new machine to do that, called the Quick Pick.
I don't know how many of these were built, but probably not 24.
They had them made by a local sheet metal company, C&K Lord, in Cambridge, Maryland.
Actually, let me walk you around the front of this machine. This is something.
The Quick Pick is this huge contraption. It's probably like 15 feet long. It looks like something a mad scientist cooked up to dissect crustaceans. Crabs get loaded onto a conveyor belt, and they slowly enter the scary dungeon of the Quick Pick.
There's a couple of small rotary saws in here. There's these rotary brushes. At first glance, this looks absolutely Rube Goldberg-esque.
But despite all this research and money, it turned out this machine was actually not great at picking crabs, which I think goes to show that there are no shortcuts in this industry.
So it's not perfect. It does, in fact, leave little bits and pieces of shell. It doesn't pick as cleanly as a good crab picker.
Human was just better than machine. This is a really labor-intensive industry, and the people who do this work are highly skilled.
You had to be careful that you didn't cut your hand with a knife or stick claws or whatever the crabs in your hands. Mm-hmm. But after I got the hang of it, it wasn't so bad. But I didn't care for it at first.
This is Nicey Turpin. She worked in the Maryland Crab Meat Company's processing facility in Crisfield in the 90s. This interview was recorded by the Chesapeake Bay Maritime Museum.
Nicey worked as a picker at this facility for more than 40 years. At that point, she had her technique down to a science.
Pull it back off and clean it, cut your crab, and separate your meat as you go along.
Like the striking workers in the 30s, Nicey was paid by how much crab meat she picked.
You got paid what you made. Mm-hmm. See, that was piecework.
But after the crab season was over, near the end of the year, it was hard to find another job.
Well, see, then you would draw unemployment until you went back to work again in the spring.
Crab pickers had their wins. The Crisfield strike protected wages, and the Quick Pick was a bust. But as many crabbers and watermen started to leave the business in the mid-20th century for more stable work, crab pickers did too.
By the mid-90s, a generation of crab pickers moved on, but there wasn't a younger generation to take their place. And yet, Marylanders still wanted their crab.
So local crab-picking houses had to find pickers from somewhere else. Plants began to bring in workers from Central America.
So how does this work?
Let's dive into a little bit of immigration law. To keep labor costs low, many crab-picking houses bring in workers on H-2B visas. Every year, the U.S. government opens up a lottery for employers to get their hands on some of these visas.
Crab houses might get all the visas for the workers they requested, or some, or none at all.
Packing plant owners have had to learn to be lobbyists, to advocate to Congress to get these visas, and it's been a year-by-year struggle.
We asked multiple crab-picking houses to let us speak with workers, but we were turned down. Some said no because of the pandemic, which makes sense.
But others said no because there was no one for us to speak with. Not a single worker at the start of crab picking season. These facilities were not winners in the visa lottery.
And that means more crab meat is being imported from overseas. Fewer workers in Maryland crab houses equals more imported crab. So it's not a surprise that people are trying to exit this business. Even families with generations in the industry are pivoting.
How about you all? I mean, would you all want to go into a business where each year you weren't sure if you were going to be able to operate or not?
This is Travis Todd. He runs Ocean's Odyssey, a seafood restaurant in Cambridge, Maryland. The restaurant used to be a crab processing facility that hired local workers to pick crabs. But in 2009, they shut down the picking operation and decided instead to go all in on the restaurant. They didn't want to have to rely on the fickle visa lottery.
If we were going to really concentrate on the processing part of the business, that was an issue that we would have more or less no say on.
It was already too hard to hire local crab pickers.
It's one thing to do it with dinner with friends and a couple of cold beers, and you're sitting there picking the crabs and enjoying yourself and eating while you're doing it. But if you're producing that crab meat, you know, just for the sake of producing crab meat, you know, that's a lengthy and laborious process.
The restaurant business is a notoriously unpredictable one, with thin profit margins. So it really says something that this was Travis's safety net.
And that brings us back to Captain TikTok himself, Luke McFadden.
Everybody knows a guy that's a crabber.
Not everybody knows a guy that can make a living doing it, you know what I mean?
Whenever a crab gets sold, it's crabbers and their crew who make the least off that purchase. This summer, Luke is trying to change that, and the first place he announced it was TikTok.
Coming soon this spring, you can buy all the crabs you want from me on the corner of Margate and Furnace Branch Road here in Glen Burnie, Maryland. I already have my sign up, so you can see every time you drive past. This is exactly where you'll meet me, right here. And I'm one step ahead of you.
Selling crabs himself makes Luke's week even longer. Because after 5 straight days of getting up before sunrise to haul crabs onto his boat, Luke sells crabs all weekend.
But to him, it's worth it. He sees this as a way to cut out the middleman and to build his business.
You don't want to have all your eggs in one basket, but it's hard not to when you're into crabbing. So it's like, all right, this is something else I can kind of do to further the business a little bit. You know what I'm saying? Yep.
In May, Luke started selling crabs directly to customers. But that first Friday, he ran into trouble.
It was my first day trying to sell crabs at my stand at 7333 East Furnace Branch Road in Glen Burnie, Maryland. And my refrigerator has already stopped working. The plug burned up, so I'm trying to replace one before my crabs get a little too warm here. But it's always something. Come see me. Come buy crabs. Friday.
When it comes to catching and selling crabs, there aren't any shortcuts. The day we joined CJ, he had a pretty dismal catch. And when Luke tried to sell his own crabs, he immediately ran into some trouble.
It seems that even if you get your hands on some local crabs to pick this summer, there shouldn't be any shortcuts there either. Because this is a meal that takes time and patience. You have to be the kind of person that's willing to crack, dig, squeeze, and extract meat out of the tiniest of legs and crevices.
So the next time we dig in, we'll be thinking of NYSE and the migrant workers who do this for a living today. And we'll remember those who fought for fairer wages before.
We'll think about Luke, CJ, and all the crabbers and watermen out on the bay starting their days at 4, hauling hundreds of pots onto their boat to see what the day's catch is.
And it'll make our meal that much sweeter. This episode of Dish City was produced by me, Patrick Fort.
And me, Ruth Tam. Our associate producer is Shweta Wadway.
Our editor is Anne-Marie Awad. This episode was mixed by Adrian Danhauser.
WAMU's general manager is Erica Pulley-Hayes, and Jonathan Blakely is WAMU's interim director of content.
Special thanks to Bethany Ziegler at the Chesapeake Bay Maritime Museum.
If you loved this episode, please subscribe and leave us a review wherever you're listening to podcasts right now. You can also support our work by leaving us a tip at wamu.org/supportdishcity. Any amount is appreciated. Thank you very, very much.
We'll see you next time.